coming up on the Get Lean, Eat Clean podcast.
So for me, I try to hit at least 225 to 250 grams of protein a day. I try to go about a gram, 1.25 to 1.5 grams per pound of body weight. So my clients, so I owe, even for my female clients, I always hit them at a gram per pound. I don't care. And if they're super heavy, like let's say they're 200 pounds and they come into me, I'm probably not going to put them at 200 grams of protein. I'm probably going to put them on what their lean mass is, what I might presuppose their lean mass is. So maybe for a 200-pound individual, that looks like 130, 140 pounds, give or take. I'm going to put them at that mark first and then go from there.
Hello, and welcome to the Get Lean, Eat Clean podcast. I'm Brian Grinn, and I'm here to give you actionable tips to get your body back to what it once was 5, 10, even 15 years ago. Each week, I'll give you an in-depth interview with a health expert from around the world to cut through the fluff and get you long-term sustainable results. This week, I interviewed former natural bodybuilder, personal trainer, and podcast host, Justin Groth. We discussed his journey into bodybuilding and the lessons he's learned. We also got into the myths and misconceptions surrounding bodybuilding itself and the belief that lifting weights will make women bulky. He highlights the need for individualized training and nutrition plans, as well as the importance of mindset and behavior change in achieving your fitness goals. Really enjoyed my interview with Justin. I know you will too. Thanks so much for listening and enjoy the show.
All right. Welcome to the Get Lean, Eat Clean podcast. My name is Brian Grinn and I'm Justin Groth. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Brian. Thanks for having me, bud.
Take two. Justin and I tried recording a week ago. It didn't quite work out, but we're back at it here. Yeah. And Justin, yeah, glad to have you on. Trainer, former natural bodybuilder, right?
Yes.
Podcast host of Straight from the Chest podcast. And maybe give the audience a little backstory of yourself and how you, you know, got into bodybuilding. I know you have a studio as well where you train out of as well, correct?
Yeah, personal training. Yep.
Yeah.
So I got into bodybuilding really probably later on in life. I started when I was about 20, 21 years old. And it was just came out of a situation of trying to find my, and I hate to say it like this, but trying to find my identity, man. Like in high school, I always navigated towards what other people were doing. And there was something I felt biologically wrong with that. Like I didn't feel like I was a follower. I felt like I was a leader. And I just always had that underpinning with me, but I didn't know quite how to extract it. I didn't know even how to identify it. And I basically, make a long story short, I ended up dieting to get very, very skinny. And for context, I was never a hefty person. I was never a really, really lean person. I was kind of right in the middle. I'm 5'11". I was 5'11", 170 when I was in high school. And so I was normal body weight. But for me and what I compared myself to, it wasn't where I should be. I feel like I should have been a little bit leaner, less pudgy around the waistline, et cetera, right? So I ended up dieting really, really extensively. And I just didn't know any better. So I just did the best I know, which was eat little and do lots of cardio. I ran everywhere, skateboard everywhere, did all that. And I got to a point where I was really, really anorexic and I needed intervention, basically. I'm not trying to make it into a big ordeal, like, using the buzzword of intervention, but it really was like, it was a self-imposed intervention on myself. I went to my family and said, look, I need help. Cause I know with my addictive personality, I'm not going to reverse this. Or if I do reverse, it's not going to be for quite a while where damage has already been done. And they knew that. And they were helpful enough to guide me towards a nutritionist and then a personal trainer. So I started to revert things and I went the opposite direction, started to put on a little bit of muscle mass. And I noticed something about the sport of weightlifting when I got involved with it. It was something that I did with so much more discipline than I did anything else in my life with. And I played sports in my earlier days, baseball, basketball. I was never really competitive with those things. And I never really cared a lot about those sports. I never cared to get better at them. And for some reason, the notion of lifting weights, I gravitated towards that, even though it was way more challenging than anything I'd ever done sports-wise in the past. But for some reason, that called my name. And I also was really good at it. And I realized that really early on, I should say that I was really good at it. And I was compelled to keep doing that. And then that fed the addictive personality, like I just mentioned. So that fed the addictive personality. And I went from one end of the spectrum to the whole opposite end of the spectrum. And then that led to me being, competing. Obviously, I competed naturally, like you just mentioned in the introduction. And that was my own moral pursuit. I mean, I just did that because that was something that I've never done any drugs. I've never drank. I've never been high. I've never been drunk. Never in my life. And even current day, and I'm 39 years old. So that was something that it never was an option to me, even though it was an option. So anyways, I didn't do that. I always just took over the counter stuff, whatever I could get my hands on, creatine, glutamine, branched amino acids, all the whole gamut of things. And that helped me to have an edge, but I never traveled down that path. And again, it was just my moral perspective over things. Now, that led to me being a personal trainer, because in my gym, a lot of people noticed my body transformation. And they always asked me, or they started to ask me, I should say, what are you doing that for, Justin? Why do you train that way? Or what's that exercise for? Can you come watch me do this and make sure my form's correct, etc.? And I realized that I really love to pour into people the knowledge that I've accrued from bodybuilding and doing it competitively, just training myself, and ended up turning into a career, right? And really, that's what I ended up doing it mobile for a while, going to people's houses, doing it mobile. And then I landed me to opening up a brick and mortar not so long after that, I should say.
And where's your brick and mortar located?
So we're in Arroyo Grande, California, which is probably smack dab. I always call it smack dab between the areas of LA and San Francisco. We're right in the middle. It's called the Central Coast of California. And that's where we're at.
Very cool. And what would you say, being in the natural bodybuilding space, like what are some of the biggest things you've learned about just competing in your body when it comes to bodybuilding that you sort of can apply today?
Well, I've learned that you'll never look like the freaks on stage. I mean, that's just first and foremost. And that I've learned also that most people that claim that they're natural really aren't. And they hide behind that red veil of that transparency. And a lot of people in the fitness industry want to take credit for what they haven't gained themselves. And that all is the body. That's representative of the body and representative of the strength numbers. And it's something that is not talked about often, although it's being a little bit more, it's being a little bit more expressed throughout the different mediums like social media, Instagram, YouTube, etc. People are coming out more forth, they're becoming more forthright with it, but still most people they're not transparent with the fact that they do some type of SARM, steroid, etc. And it's really sad because we got youth coming into the fitness industry and they're just overly compelled by what they see on social media, and they want to emulate that. And they think that the way to do it is, let me just eat my ass off and train my ass off, and I'm going to get those same results. And there's so many variables that go into play with developing a body. And most of the variables, they're not even being transparent with. And so it leaves a lot of people in the dark about how to navigate the fitness. And then they don't get the results that they want because they're comparing themselves to someone like Bradley Martin or someone. And I'm just using vast comparisons here. I'm not trying to put a trigger on Bradley or anything like that, but you take people like Bradley or Kai, or I'm sorry, like Cali Muscle, and these guys, they're not necessarily saying they're not on drugs, but they're not saying they're not. And these people are looking at these people and thinking that this physique is like attainable, and it's just not. I mean, for one, you might not even have the genetic makeup as these guys do. And then two, you don't know what kind of drugs they're taking, and they might be taking like everything under the sun, and you just don't know. You think all they're taking is pre-workout and food and protein and eating lots of food and training their ass off. But anyways, it's definitely a muddy message that that people are sending to the youth that are just getting into training, and they're not being open and honest with what really is involved with it.
Yeah. No, I hear you. I mean, especially now, like with social media and everyone's Instagram page is pictures upon pictures of like almost perfection. And I think it does sort of I would hate being like a kid growing up nowadays. It's definitely probably a little bit more difficult, especially if you're really conscious about your body and about your image and things like that, as I would imagine a lot of high schoolers are. I've actually taken a hiatus from social media, and like, not that I was necessarily all over it, but like, it's sort of a nice break, and I would recommend that to anybody, you know, no matter the age. Like, you don't have to be off it altogether, but you know, go a day here and there, take a day a week of just not being on it. We just get caught up in all that. What kind of client, what's your typical client like, at your studio that you see?
Really between the ages of 30 and 50, that's generally female, generally sedentary, generally just wants to get a little bit stronger, feel a little bit better, be able to move and feel strong while they're moving. And then also having have some type of accountability when it comes to what they're eating and kind of an outline of what to eat and what not to, what to steer clear of, or how to control their behaviors or their habits when it comes to eating. That's generally the main populace in my business.
And where do you start with most people? Do you start with, this is a question that comes up for me a lot. Do you start with, okay, let's get you going, let's get your fitness goals in line, and then we'll focus on maybe food and nutrition, or like where, or do you do it all together? Or where do you typically start with a client?
Man, it really depends on our sit down, our consultation that we have, where they want to take this in the beginning. Some people are really gung ho. Some people are just like, they tread lightly, and you as the professional have to be able to take into consideration these cues that you're getting from the conversation, and only dispense with suggestions that are gonna make this person more productive and really stimulate them, and not make them think that they're opening this Pandora's box of dread, where you know, oh, I'm gonna be 3 months of just hard training and diet and chicken breasts and broccoli. I mean, some people want that, but a lot of people don't, and you have to be able to decipher which is which when you sit down and conversate with that person, and only dispense it with, like I said, suggestions that are going to serve them, and they're going to actually motivate them to want to do this on their own, at least on their own. When I say on their own, with you, doing it with you. And I guess working as a team, I should say. Because people hate fitness already. Like most people that come to me, they hate working out. And it's the reason why they come to me, because they know they have to do it. They know it's a very, very organic medicine to take, but at the same time, doesn't mean that they're going to be jumping up and down for joy when they come walk in the studio for the training session. They hate working out. And the reason why they do it is because they know if they don't do it with a trainer, they're not going to do it on their own. So they hire me for the accountability purpose, right? Or I should say aspect. But also when they're there, you want to make it a fun, enjoyable experience for them whilst producing productivity in them and whilst giving them the result that they want. That's really what defines a trainer. Not somebody who can sit and count reps, or who can, you know, oh, well, you're this amount of body mass. We need to cut you down this, or we need to lose this amount of weight. And this is your body fat percentage. Now you need to be within the range of this. And, you know, all these different metrics that really don't make that much of a make really don't matter all that much when you get down to a practical state. And this is something that I've learned throughout the years of personal training. There is a number on a chart that we could look at that defines healthy, but ultimately, if that person is begrudgingly doing the work to get there, well, you're not re-cementing or enforcing different habits and behaviors, this person's just going to bounce back to what their old way was after they get to that goal. So you want to change the whole programming of the mind. You want to change the behavioral patterns of the person. You want to change the habits of the person in general. And you do that by working with them on a consistent basis, not just the personal training, but you work in tandem with that mental aspect.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's a good point. I always say, like, especially in the beginning, it's important to try to get like small wins, right? Because you want to build some momentum. And a lot of times they might come to you and they don't have a lot of confidence in what they're doing. And so if they do get those small wins right away, that builds confidence and it sort of snowballs. And I think then you build momentum, right?
Yeah,
and then,
yeah, true.
Yeah.
Very
yeah.
true.
And typically, like, for individuals coming into your studio, are you working with them, like, if you were going to say 2 to 3 days, you know, come on in, or what is, like, do you typically see someone on a weekly basis?
It's about 2 to 3. Yeah.
Yeah. And then you sort of do their programming based off how many times they're coming in per week.
Based on based on how many times they're coming in a week, if they have any goals in mind, which most of them, they have kind of hazy goals. Nobody has really a definitive goal. But based on how much they're coming in and where they're at currently, I mean, I set little markers, little small goalposts for them to meet every month. And we just titrate up or down depending on if they met the goal, if they're having good productivity in the gym, outside of the gym, et cetera. It really is so vastly subjective, Brian, that you can't really put a stake in the ground of this is what I do generally, you know, because it's all based on the person and what they need at the time. So many people need so many different things, even though it seems like there's one overarching general goal, which is to get strong, get healthy, get in shape, blah, blah, blah. But that looks different for a lot of people.
Yeah. And since you work, you said prominently with women, is there, not to put a umbrella over all the, and like you just said, it's an individual basis, depending on, the person, but would you say that a lot of women that are coming in actually become too restrictive when it comes to eating, or, mainly when it comes to eating, I would say, are they just too restrictive?
Absolutely, man. They end up believing these myths about food or these myths about diet practices. And all too often it derails them from any progression, any real life progression. And this is the reason why they need somebody of a coach to keep them in line, to keep them dispelling the myths that they're believing. And these myths are oftentimes further cementing in bad behaviors that are keeping them from their goal. And more importantly, they're demonizing certain things, certain foods or certain ways of eating, or, you know, what have you. You can go down the laundry list of things of demonization nowadays with when it comes to foods and diets and et cetera.
Yeah. All the more reason to have a coach, right? I mean, I think there's so much information out there. It's like an overabundance of information that it can just leave you confused.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that could be a whole other podcast talking about all the misinformation that's out there.
Yeah.
What would you say? I don't know if you're going to say one myth of when it comes to fitness or nutrition that you think is that you'd like to just get rid of.
One myth I hear a lot of, well, I hear two a lot. The main ones are I can't eat past 6 p.m. And then the other one is if I lift weights, I'm going to get bulky. And those are the constant myths I'm having to dispel more over any other myth or over any other query that someone might have. It's always those two that seem to be the most rampant.
Right. Women thinking they're going to bulk up, right? Like they're going to look like a man or just like too broad. Right.
And it's going to happen overnight.
I know. Like, I mean, I've been married for a few years, but when I first met my wife, she was a runner. And I'm like, you know, running's fine, but like, you got to start lifting. and it's amazing. And like, she wasn't scared of it. She did it. And like the transformation, just building that strength. And it just not only like just obviously appearance wise looks great, but like just for longevity. And as you get older, just trying to just have to be able to do functional things throughout your day as you get older. That you might take for granted when you're younger, but as you get older, it's that much more difficult to do.
It's true. Very true, man.
What would you say are, do you have any thoughts around like nutrition and like where you would start someone as far as like, do you have them track initially and then sort of take a baseline and then draw your conclusions from there?
Yeah. Essentially what I do with somebody who's coming in and maybe they're 40, 50, 60 pounds overweight is obviously I know they've developed some bad behaviors, bad eating behaviors, et cetera, or patterns throughout the years. And that's the reason why they've gotten to this level. But I would, at the beginning, I say, I want them to track a few days of the week. And generally I like them to track a Monday or a Tuesday. And then I like them to track a Thursday and then a Saturday. So I want to have these difference in days, because the difference in days will often lead to a difference in behavioral patterns throughout those different days of the week. And most notably Saturday, when they're free from work, they're free from responsibility, and they're just doing things with their kids or their family, you really get to see how loose they get. So what I do is I take a mean of those 3 days, and then I will set that as the target. I'll take the mean and I'll say, okay, let's say you have 1700 calories on Monday, and then on Thursday you have 1900 calories, and then on Saturday you're having like 27 to 3000 calories. I'll set a mean of it's all arbitrary, but I will set a mean of around, I want you to meet at 2050 calories a day. Meet me at 2050 a day, and I want you to track these 2050 calories a day. But what you're not taking into consideration is this person's now moving more often. They're training, they're weight training with me. They're doing supplemental workouts outside of the gym with me, or not with me, but rather on their own, but prescribed from me. So the amount of productive energy that's expended outwards is now at a deficit from what they were previously doing. So 2050 calories, even though it seems like, well, they're only eating 17 on Monday, 19 on Thursday. You got to understand that as we look at this from a whole macro perspective, not the micro every day, they're actually taking less calories, and especially if they take that into the Saturday and Sunday schedule as well. So that, and I put a presence on protein. I will set their protein marks for them to reach every single day. These are non-negotiables. They meet the protein mark and they meet the caloric mark every day. I do not give them meals. I don't say, this is what I want you to eat for meal one, meal two, meal three. Because in my experience, that shit doesn't work. People do not adhere to that. And you're wasting your time. And people are wasting their money getting a meal plan. They might follow for a few days. But when life happens and they don't meal prep, well, they're back to Burger King. Or they're back to the grocery store for some quick salad or burrito or microwave or something. And so I don't want to waste my time doing that. And I don't want to waste their money. So what I do is this is a constant counseling process with them. And they pay me to do that. They pay me to teach them in real life how to navigate the nutritional world in real life. They learn, they experience, and then they see the result. And then that gives them the incentive to keep moving upwards. And when I say moving upwards, I mean raising the bar in terms of the challenge. So getting, you know, more restrictive with their calories, getting more restrictive with the fun days, the cheat meals or whatever, et cetera. It depends. Again, it's all subjective based on the person, where they're at, what their goals are, et cetera. But I always start them off with the mean of what they eat within those 3 days marker. And those are the days that I have them track. Set the goals of the protein, set the goals of the calories. Those are non-negotiables. They reach those targets every day. And I also check in on the whim. So I'll say, okay, for example, Jessica, what did you have on Tuesday? I want you to send me everything for Tuesday. I never tell them I'm going to check in on Tuesday. I say, you're going to track your foods every single day. And then I'm going to at random choose a day. And I want to see all of the foods for that day. And so when I check in with them, they have to send it. And it's all marked. The day, so they can't make up that day. And I might say, I want Tuesday on a Friday. So I know that they were tracking, they were making sure that they were diligent in their targets of protein, calories, et cetera. And then also the big elephant in the room, if they're not losing weight, they're clearly not following my program. So there's always that too. And people love to underreport. They love to lie about what they're eating. When realistically, this is all an arithmetic. It's simple arithmetic. If you're eating what I prescribe in terms of the caloric consumption every day, I know you're training because I see you here and I train you personally, and you're doing the supplemental routines outside of the gym here, you should be moving downwards. So if you're not, it's because you're underreporting. More often than not, it's because they're underreporting. And this is common among people that have developed misbehaviors when it comes to food and when it comes to being really a delusional state. They don't think that that extra something or other didn't matter. That soft drink didn't matter. That small bite-sized Reese's didn't matter. All these things add up throughout the week. Now, is that going to keep pounds on your frame? No. But if you're engaging in these misbehaviors or in these faulty behavioral patterns, chances are you're doing much more than just those small little mishaps. Chances are it's leading to a bigger, more nefarious thing that you're taking part in that you're not telling me about. Maybe you got drunk with your friends, you consumed 900 calories in alcohol more than you would have, you know, but you didn't tell me about that. And you didn't even log it, because who's going to log that? You know, most people, like I said, this goes back to a delusional state of, well, it didn't matter, or I'm not going to count these. I'm going to delve back into my misbehaviors, and I'm going to forget that they ever happened. And this is all in part what I need to change, and I need to readjust, which is the reason why I do not do diet models, where this is more of a tutelage under me that they're undergoing, because they need to rewire their brain. They need to rewire the way that they operate with food.
Now, Justin, as far as your routines are concerned, what are your like main principles that you work on based on your goals and where you want to be? I mean, obviously, I'm sure your goals have changed through the years, obviously, when you were competing and now you're not. But what types of routines have you implemented into your life right now as far as health and wellness?
Diet or training wise?
Both.
So diet, I follow the same thing that I tell my clients to do. I follow the amount of protein I'm supposed to take in every day, which is obviously much higher than their needs. And I follow the amount of calories I'm supposed to take in every day. So I've gotten good at eyeballing throughout the years and years that I've done competitive bodybuilding and just living this lifestyle in general. I've done this ever since I was 20 years old. So, and I've done it at competitive levels too. So I'm very, very good at eyeballing portions, etc. And I'm very good at numbers in terms of what serving size has this, et cetera, et cetera. So I don't have to follow a chart. I don't have to follow a tracker. I'm a human tracker when it comes to this sort of thing. So, but I follow the same principles that I lend to my clients. And that is, you meet your protein requirements every day. You meet the amount of calories that you're supposed to intake every day.
And what is your protein requirement?
So for me, I try to hit at least 225 to 250 grams of protein a day. I try to go about a gram, 1.25 to 1.5 grams per pound of body weight. So my clients, even for my female clients, I always hit them at a gram per pound. I don't care. And if they're super heavy, like let's say they're 200 pounds and they come into me, I'm probably not going to put them at 200 grams of protein. I'm probably going to put them on what their lean mass is, what I might presuppose their lean mass is. So maybe for a 200-pound individual, that looks like 130, 140 pounds, give or take. I'm going to put them at that mark first and then go from there. But the point is that I set these parameters and I follow these parameters. And you get to a point where you develop this certain, like a metabolic set point, where your body governs based on appetite, hunger, and cravings, etc. And it kind of auto-regulates, right? And then you stay within that means. And I know, like, for example, because I'm very monitored over my body, I know if I gained a pound of pure body fat, or if I collected 3 pounds of water retention, 4 pounds of water retention from a cheat meal that I just ate. I can discern between the difference. And then on top of that, what will happen is I'll likely not be, if I gained a little bit of body fat, which it's hard for that to happen. I have to go through weeks and weeks and weeks of overeating on my cheat meal days for me to gain a pound or two and it to be visible. I'll end up titrating down in terms of what I eat with the next cheat meal, the next couple of cheat meals. And this is all auto-regulated. It's like I don't even crave the certain foods. I'll crave less food. I'll crave eating less calorically dense foods, and my body just will fluctuate within a certain range. And that's because I developed that range over years and years and years of basically resubstantiating, re-cementing in that model, that framework of that metabolic set point based on the way that I eat, based on my behaviors, my habits, etc. So
what's your training protocol?
My training is a standard bodybuilding bro split, you know, where I do legs, I do chest, I do chest and biceps, I do shoulders and tris, I do back by itself, I do legs by themselves. And I'll train a 2-1, one off, 2-1, two off.
Explain that real quick.
So Monday, Tuesday. So Monday will be legs.
Oh.
And then Tuesday will be an upper body workout, like a chest and biceps. And then Wednesday will be off. I'll do cardio that day. And then Thursday I'll hit back by itself, back and traps, etc. Then I'll go in on Friday will be a shoulder and tricep day. Then I'll have Saturday, Sunday off. And I've been following that protocol for years, man, where I do train just 4 days a week. I've done it all, though. I've done 7 days a week. I've done 6 days a week. I've done 5 days a week. I've done it all, man. The only thing I haven't done is 3 days a week. I haven't taken it down to that level. I presume that I will when I get older, but right now I'm too vibrant to take it down to 3 days. I can recover just as good on 4 days, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. For me, 4 days is about where I'm at. I do more upper, trying to figure mainly upper lower and then upper lower. I like to hit lower twice a week.
Yeah. I used to do that too. Yeah. I did that for a couple of years on like just straight. I didn't take a rest. I didn't take a week or deload or anything. I trained straight like a year and a half, 2 years, upper, lower. I did upper, lower, rest, upper, lower, rest, rest. And right. I found that in natural bodybuilding, and I preface with natural bodybuilding because people have to hear this. If you're listening and you've been lifting hard for the last 5-6 years, and you've been paying very close attention to your diet, you're fairly lean around 12% body fat, and you don't party, you don't drink, you don't smoke, you get good sleep, and you've been training that way consistently where you haven't missed. You haven't missed a workout, you haven't missed a meal, etc. You're probably going to notice that you haven't changed in the last year or two. Your biceps haven't grown any. Your pecs haven't grown any. Your lats haven't gotten wider. And that's probably because you're very close to the natural mark of how much muscle you can actually make as an organic specimen of a human being. You're probably at your cutoff. So, for example, if I have that questionnaire with somebody that's coming in to see me that wants to gain more muscle, when I ask them that and they tell me yes, 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 and they check all the boxes, I'll say, well, and let's say that their goal is to gain 10 more pounds of body mass. I'm going to say, well, this is not practical. It's not going to happen for you. It can happen if you take drugs, but chances are you're at your pinnacle of how much muscle mass you can accrue naturally. And they've done studies on this. I mean, it's around 28 to 35 pounds roughly of extra contractile tissue above what your normal body weight is. So again, if we just go back and say, well, what were you normally as a regular kid without any body dysmorphia, any kind of weird, like, when I say body dysmorphia, I mean, I shouldn't say body dysmorphia, I guess. If you're not fat, you're not lean, you're not really, really skinny, you're not underweight, you're not overweight, you're right in the middle, and you are taking you're about 12-15% body fat, which is pretty lean for a kid that doesn't do anything. But if that's your body fat, you can suspect to gain around 30 pounds of new contractile tissue. So whatever that is in terms of your height, etc., and then that's what you're basically left with naturally. Anybody else that tells you different is just lying to you, because we have data to support this. We have extensive data to support this. So people that think that they can just add, it just doesn't work that way. And most people, if they're real with themselves, they'll understand, like, look, man, it doesn't matter what split I do. It doesn't matter how hard I really train. if anything, the harder I train as a natural, the worse it does on me. Like the more it's putting me into the gutter, because I'm elevating cortisol levels higher than they need to be. I'm suppressing testosterone more than it needs to be suppressed. And all these things, they don't lend themselves a favorable hand, physiologically speaking. So I would say that it doesn't matter. Once you've gotten to that precipice, you train for long years, you're diligent, you've not missed a day. It's safe to say that you can do any routine and you're probably not going to regress, but you're also probably not going to progress. You're going to stay relatively so or so in the middle.
Are you saying that in general, if you've sort of plateaued, let's say you've worked really hard for the last few years, but you've somewhat plateaued, are you saying that maybe you should take a step back a little bit and then reassess and then come back like sort of fresher? Like, are you saying someone can almost overdo it?
Yeah. So it depends on how long you've been training, right? It depends on all those parameters that they've been, if you're redlining all those parameters that I just mentioned, where your diet's on point, you're managing your stress, you're getting good sleep, you know, and you've been training your ass off. You train with massive, massive work ethic and intention behind each set, each exercise. You don't just go in the gym and just push weight around and, you know, check the box that, oh, I did my workout for the day. If you're doing all those things and you've done those things extensively for the last 5-6 years, it's safe to say, man, and I'll put this up against any natural bodybuilder, you're not going to gain that much more body mass in terms of like what's noticeable. Like, I'm not going to turn 45, you know, in 6 years and be like a fucking mass monster just because I trained for another 6 years hard. It's not going to happen.
Right. You're almost saying like there's a genetic potential that everyone probably get to within their frame.
There is.
And yeah. And no, I totally see that. Yeah. I mean, obviously I'm not going to look like, gosh, I don't know. I'm interviewing. I don't know if you know Jordan Shallow. He's a big guy. He's been in professional bodybuilding. I'm never going to look like him.
Right.
And I'm not going to look like you, Justin. I mean, yeah. So I totally see that. Yeah. And most people, like you said, aren't doing what you said. They haven't probably maxed out every avenue possible, but some people maybe. But I even find with myself, I'm hitting new. I've been more dedicated to lifting. I've lifted for such a long time, but like, you know, you sort of go through these lulls, and now like I'm getting out of like a lull and trying to push a little bit more. And you can definitely break through plateaus. I think for most people they can, but yeah, exactly. I think there is some type of potential, like a DNA potential or whatever, yeah, or whatever that you can potentially get to.
Well, it's essentially, it's basically comes down to myostatin. And that's the thing that will govern how much muscle mass we can generate on the body. And that's what, when you see these bodybuilders that are on stage, they're taking a plethora of different anabolics and pharmaceuticals, their myostatin is inhibited, which is the reason why they're able to gain above what something is, what could otherwise be gained naturally.
Sure, sure. Yeah, yeah. And you're speaking just on a natural standpoint, which right. Which I get that. well, this was good. I typically ask this question to all my guests. What's one tip you'd give an individual who's, you know, maybe looking to get their body or mind back to what it once was 10, 15 years ago? What one tip would you give that individual?
I mean, if somebody's entertaining the thought of getting their body, their mind back, they need to just dive headfirst into whatever it is that's going to make that happen. And let's say that person needs guidance, they need accountability, they need to hire a trainer. Let's say that person can do it on their own. Well, they need to adopt a schedule and not break that schedule. They need to stay disciplined to the schedule no matter what they feel like, no matter what their day looks like. They need to carve out time for themselves to get that workout in. They need to carve out time to meal prep. They need to make the extra funds to be able to hire a meal prep company maybe if they don't want to do it on their own. But they need to make it a priority. So essentially, They have to make this a priority. It's funny what happens when somebody makes something a priority, what the human person, what the human mind, body, et cetera, is capable of. If you make it a priority, there's no distractions. But if you do not make something a priority, everything will distract you. And you'll find a reason to not do this thing at every different turn you take. But if something is a priority, if living is a priority, Brian, and you don't want to die, then you're going to make sure that you mitigate all the possible inferences that might cause you to die. You're going to mitigate all the risk concern with you dying by doing everything perfect that keeps you alive. But it's just simply not a priority for people. If getting their mind, their body back is a priority, well, they'll put their head down and they'll put the work in and they won't make excuses for this work that has to be done. It's simple. It's simply put is if it's a priority, you will make it happen.
Yeah. Perfect. Love that. Yeah. I couldn't agree more. Where's the best place for people to find you, Justin?
Right now you can find me on social media, Instagram, Justin Craig Groff. No underscores, no spaces, just a straight Justin Craig Groff. You can also visit the website, theofficialjustingroff.com. We have an app that you can, if you don't want to hire a trainer and it's not affordable for you, we have a custom app that's on the Apple App Store and the Android Google Play Store. It's called Elite Mind Plus Fitness, and you can purchase a program there, and it'll track everything for you, track your foods, it'll track your workouts, it'll track your progress, etc. And very affordable rate. I mean, it's only $20 a month right now. So check that out if you're looking for a trainer and you can't afford the $1,000 a month that it's going to cost you.
Yeah, I love that. And I'll definitely put links in the show notes for that. And Justin, thanks for sharing all the knowledge with us today and coming on the podcast.
Oh, thanks, Brian. I appreciate having you, man.
Thanks for listening to the Get Lean, Eat Clean podcast. I understand there are millions of other podcasts out there and you've chosen to listen to mine, and I appreciate that. Check out the show notes at briangrin.com for everything that was mentioned in this episode. Feel free to subscribe to the podcast and share it with a friend or family member that's looking to get their body back to what it once was. Thanks again and have a great day.